If you got a Bible, flip over to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. I want to do a little demonstration, if you'll humor me. And I've asked two of the teenage guys to come over and help me. So I'm putting them on the spot here. But Dorian and David, if y'all could come over and help me out, I would appreciate this. And we're going to have kind of a competition, okay, where I've got these two blocks. And what they're going to each have is they're each going to have a pencil. This is an unconventional sport here, okay, that I've just made up. And so here's what they're supposed to do, okay? We're going to have a little competition to see who can get their block in first. Doran, you got this one over here. And David, that's you over there. And you got to get your block using just your pencil into this bucket, okay? It seems challenging, but I think you guys, y'all look resourceful. Let's see if you can do that. Ready, set, go. They're doing a great job, putting a lot of effort in here. Oh, that was very close. I like the resourceful thinking, Dorian. Okay, that's close. All right, well, let's take a break there for a second. Okay, that might eventually work, okay, to do it like that. You might eventually be able to flip it up into the bucket, and that would have probably ruined my illustration if you had succeeded at that. But now here's what I want you to try. Let's say that the rules to the game are still the same, and the way that you win is to get the block into the bucket. But instead of being on different teams, you guys are actually on the same team and can work together. How might you do it differently this time? Go ahead and go. And you don't have to get them in at the same time. Maybe this is more challenging. I believe in you guys. Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Almost. I promise that this can work. Try grabbing closer to the end of the pencil. Grab it up here. And use the end of your eraser. There you go. There you go. All right. Hey, all right. All right. Good job. Okay. Y'all can go and have a seat. Go ahead and have a seat. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dorian and David. All right. So, well, here was the point of that. Okay. Sometimes there's a task. There's two things I want to point out. Sometimes there's a task that seems impossible, all right? And so they might have been able to flip it up and do it that way. Really, I think the rule is supposed to be you can't flick it up. That would have made things a little bit more challenging, right? It would have definitely made it impossible for one person to get this in by himself. But when you work together, there are some tasks that seem impossible, but by working together, you're able to succeed at them. And one of the main things I want to focus on is that sometimes, so like at the beginning, it seemed like they were on different teams. I'd made it seem that way intentionally. But when you realize that you're on the same team, when you realize that the rules are different and the rules have changed, hopefully it is easier to succeed. This might not have been the easiest way to succeed. But when you know that you can work together, hopefully that makes it easier to accomplish the task that you have in front of you. There's a point that I want to come across tonight, and it's this. It's about working together. And it's that a great friend will love you at your worst and can help you be your best. A great friend will love you at your worst and can help you be your best. And this illustration here, it's supposed to be easier, supposed to be helpful when you work together. And there's also some challenges in it. You've got to be on the same page in order to make it work. And in a similar way, in our lives, it's supposed to make things easier when we help each other out and work together. When we realize, in some ways, that we're not competing against each other, but we're actually on the same team. That should make things easier and more successful for us. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 through 12, here's what's written there. It says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Here, Solomon, as he's addressing this issue of the importance of having people in our lives that can help us in this life, he doesn't go into, in this part here, he doesn't go into the negatives of relationships. And there are some downsides. We're humans. We make mistakes. We're sinful people. And so sometimes friendships and relationships can go bad. Sometimes people in our lives who are supposed to help us can have a negative impact on us. They can betray us. But how it's supposed to work is that two are supposed to be better than one, that we are supposed to help one another out. And there's risk involved. When we work together, there's some vulnerability in there, but it should be totally worth it because we need other people. I was kind of typing up and titling this lesson, and I had titled it Stronger Together. And then Crystal reminded me that that was a campaign slogan, so I decided not to do that. But the idea there is that we are stronger when we work together, or that's how it should be. Now, a lot of times we don't necessarily want to work with other people. Sometimes maybe we feel like it's easier to do things on our own. I know I felt like that in some ways before, where it's like, you know what, I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to take this on by myself. But the way that God has designed us, he has designed us from the very beginning to be in relationship with one another. We are relational creatures, created in the image of a God who is also, by his nature, relational as well. 1 Samuel chapter 23, we get another look of this. Verse 15, 16. Here it says, David, he learned that Saul had come to take his life. And Saul's son Jonathan went to David and helped him find strength in God. David here is set with almost an impossible task, an impossible situation. His life is being threatened. The king is wanting to take his life. And it had to be, that has to be a very awful feeling to be on the run, to feel like you're maybe alone. And yes, he had some people with him, but he had to feel pretty lonely at times as well. But yet we see that the king's son, one of his great friends, Jonathan, did something for him. What did Jonathan do? He helped him, and the way that he helped him was specifically he helped them not find strength in himself. He didn't help David find strength in even Jonathan, but he helped David find strength in God. And so a question I want to ask tonight is two things. Who is helping you find strength in God? Can you think about who that person is? Maybe it is your spouse. Maybe it is your parent or your child. Maybe it is a great friend that you have. But you need to have somebody in your life who is helping you like Jonathan was helping David. Helping you to find strength in God. Hopefully not because you're on the run out of fear for your life. But maybe you, in a sense, are kind of feeling lonely. Maybe you're hurting. Maybe you're going through a difficult time. We were not designed to go through those times alone. But instead, we need people who can help us, point us to finding strength in God. And the second question is this. Who are you helping find strength in God? This is not a one-way thing where we receive all of the help, but we also need to have people in our lives that we are helping them find strength in God when they are feeling alone and hurting. Can you think about who those people are? Are you the kind of person that is pointing people to God and helping them find strength in him when they're going through a difficult time, when they're feeling alone, when they're hurting, when they're in need of God in their life? Two are better than one. A great friend will love you at your worst and can help you be your best. Are you the type of friend who is doing that? Are you the type of friend that is helping people find their strength in God? When someone is down, are you the type of friend who will lift them up? When someone is alone, are you the type of friend who will comfort them? Are you the type of friend who will encourage someone when they need encouragement? Are you this kind of friend? I believe the friends that you have determine the quality and direction of your life. And a lot of times a lesson like this on friendships, like this is a lesson directed towards teens, right? Like this is a lesson for students. And it is, that's true. But friendships and relationships, hopefully that extend beyond just, you know, our spouse or our immediate family, but those relationships we are in desperate need of. We need people in our lives who can strengthen us in God. Where are your friendships leading you? Another passage to turn to, and if you would turn there, because I did not have a slide for this, but it's in Ezekiel chapter 33. Turn over to Ezekiel chapter 33 for me. And it's kind of a lengthy passage, and so I thought it'd be helpful to follow along in your Bibles if you have one. Ezekiel chapter 33. Here's what's written there. The word of the Lord came to me, "Son of man, speak to your countrymen and say to them, when I bring the sword against the land and the people of the land choose one of their men and make him their watchman, and he sees the sword coming against the land and blows the trumpet to warn the people, then if anyone hears the trumpet but does not take warning, and the sword comes and takes his life, his blood will be on his own head. Since he heard the sound of the trumpet but did not take warning, his blood will be on his own head. If he had taken warning, he would have saved himself." All right, so stop right there for a second before we continue. So we get this analogy of a watchman. And the watchman, what they do is they would, you know, be at the gate. They'd be up high. And they could see further than other people could see. And so if danger was coming, they could see it before anybody else. And so the watchman's job was to warn everyone else that, hey, danger's coming. You need to get ready. You need to get prepared. You need to take action because danger is on the horizon. And so what it's saying here is that the watchmen, if they see danger coming and they warn the people that this is happening, and then the people don't heed the warning, if the people don't take action or do anything because of the warning, whose fault does that fall on? Well, it doesn't fall on the watchman. He did his job. The fault falls on the people who did not listen to the warning of the watchman. And then we get kind of the alternate side of this. Verse 6. "But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet to warn the people, and the sword comes and takes the life of one of them, that man will be taken away because of his sin. But I will hold the watchman accountable for his blood." Verse 7. "Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak and give them warning from me." So one side of the analogy is the watchman sees the danger, the watchman warns the people listen to the warning and they take action, or they don't. And if they don't, it's on them and not on the watchman. But if the watchman sees danger and does not blow the trumpet, if the watchman sees danger and doesn't warn people, whose fault is it on then? It's on the watchman. It's their job to warn people when danger is approaching, when danger is coming. And I think in a similar way as friends, as Christian brothers and sisters, as people that are, in a relationship with one another and are trying to do life together and live for God together, if we have people in our lives that we care about, that we love, and if we see that danger is approaching in their life, we have a responsibility to say something to them. It is our responsibility as friends, as spouses, as parents, as people that care about them, to let them know that danger is approaching. And if they don't take action, well, you know, we've done what we can. Maybe we need to do more and kind of go through the roof and do more than we've done in the past. But at least we've done what we're supposed to do, which was tell them that danger was coming. But if we see danger coming in their life, what kind of friend are we? What kind of loved one are we if we do not say anything? I think with teenagers today, the meaning of being a friend has changed. Now being a friend isn't so much telling someone when they're doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. But being a friend, I think now today, is kind of like, hey, whatever you're doing, I'm cool with that. That's okay. I'm going to be your friend anyways, no matter what you're doing. And this idea, I think, is dangerous because it shouldn't be like that. We should not be okay. We should never be okay with sin. And if there are people that we love and care about that have danger approaching, and maybe that danger is sin that is creeping into their life, on a consistent basis, then we need to, as friends, as loved ones who care about them, we need to say something. It is our responsibility. We are watchmen, in a sense, who are supposed to be calling that out and letting them know that danger is coming. If you go on in Ezekiel 33, verse 7 through 11, it says, "Son of man, I made you a watchman for the house of Israel, so hear the word I speak and give them warning from me. When I say to the wicked, 'O wicked man, you will surely die,' and you do not speak out to dissuade him from his ways, that wicked man will die for his sins, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the wicked man to turn from his ways, and he does not do so, he will die for his sin, but you will have saved yourself. Son of man, say to the house of Israel, 'This is what you are saying: our offenses and sins weigh us down, and we are wasting away because of them. How then can we live?' Say to them, 'As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rather that they turn from their ways and live.'" Turn is an exclamation point. So it's being yelled, but I'm not going to yell it. Turn. Turn from your evil ways. There are people that maybe we need to say this to. People that we care about. And sometimes we just want to yell at them, "Turn from your evil ways. Stop doing this. What you are doing is wrong." But because the definition of friend has sort of changed, that prevents us from doing that because, well, it's going to be awkward if I say something here. It's going to be uncomfortable if I point this out. And so we just let it slide. But if we are being a real, true, genuine friend, if we're going to be a watchman for other people in our lives, we need to tell people when danger is approaching. One more verse to look at before we finish up. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 5 and 6 says this. Says, "An open rebuke is better than hidden love. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy." And the idea here being that, listen, sometimes friends have to say things that cut into the hearts of people that they care about. Maybe there is someone that you need to say something really challenging to this week, or maybe over the next holiday, right? Maybe there's someone you need to take aside and say, "Listen, I am concerned. I am seeing this danger approaching in your life. I want you to know that I'm here for you, and I want you to help find strength in God to get through this." Tonight, maybe you are the person that has danger creeping into your life. Maybe you're aware of it, and maybe no one has pointed it out to you. Maybe it's something hidden and secret, and only you have seen it so far. But you're aware that this danger is coming, and maybe you need to make some kind of change in your life. I think it's important that we be good friends who are trying to help other people find their way in the spiritual journey. I think great friends will do things like love you at your worst and can help you be your best. Can help you be your best. I think good friends will also help other people work together to accomplish tasks that would be impossible otherwise without them. But one of the things we need to do almost before becoming a good friend to somebody else is we need to take an inward look at ourselves and figure out, am I in a good place right now? Is there danger that's creeping into my life? And do I need to do something about it? And so tonight, we want to give you an opportunity to do something about the danger that might be in your life. If you're here tonight and you need prayers and encouragement, maybe you've got some sin that you need forgiveness for. Maybe you need to become a Christian for the very first time by being baptized by the blood of Christ. We want to give you that opportunity tonight. Maybe someone has been speaking into your life and they've been a good friend to you and they've been trying to help you find strength in God and they've been telling you like, "Hey, you need to make a change in your life." And it's hit home and you need to find some way to do that. Make that decision tonight to make the changes you need to make to live for God each day. Whatever you need, whatever way we can encourage you tonight, won't you come now as together we stand and sing.